Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. When the regilding of Diana was complete, I spoke with Philadelphia Museum of Art Curator of American Art, Kathleen Foster, about the history of the statue, which in the 1890s was installed at the top of New York City's Madison Square Garden.
Now, Diana was originally installed as a weather vane?
Yes, she actually turned. In her first manifestation, she had a long drapery that would catch the wind, so she would point in the direction of the wind. At some point, about 10 years after she was installed, that scarf blew off in a storm or was taken down because it was getting damaged, and it disappeared. And it then survived for another 15 or 20 years without the scarf. In the meantime, St. Gaudens made other versions of the sculpture for indoors without the scarf. So we know that he was happy with the way she looked without the drapery, and we just didn't make any attempt to put the drapery back on.
It's kind of funny to imagine her. She's pretty large.
Yes, she's 13 feet tall, but she didn't seem so big on Madison Square Garden because she was like 350 feet above the street on top of a big tower. So she had to be that big in order to be seen from the sidewalk.
Was that unusual to put a beautiful sculpture on top of a building functioning as a weather vane?
Yes, I think so. I mean, the scale of it was surprising. However, she's hollow. She's hollow copper sheets. So as big as she is, she's actually relatively light. And she's on the system of ball bearings so that she would rotate. And so it was a brave piece of engineering to make something this big and really a very striking piece of sculpture that would rotate in the wind. I have to say that partly because of the wind and things like that, after a few years, they basically locked her in place so she didn't turn anymore. I think it was because it was a little dangerous. There was a 19th century, I would say, major genre of outdoor sculpture called the weather vane, but not this big. There is a fairly common weather vane of Lady Victory, a sort of figure of Columbia, but she's a draped figure. She's not a nude. The American farmers of New England and the Midwest did not have Diana on their barns. They would have had this patriotic figure of Lady Liberty.
So was her reception when she was first installed warm or shocking?
It was, I think, generally very excited. People were thrilled by Madison Square Garden, which was this gigantic entertainment complex. It was seen as, you know, the largest pleasure palace in the world. And so Diana was the keystone of all of this opulence. However, yes, there were a few people who were upset that they had to walk through the park and look up and see a nude figure. They felt their children should not be submitted to this kind of nudity in public. However, the general response, certainly from the art world, was very positive.
And you talked about how the artist was very prominent. Could you talk a little bit about him?
St. Gaudens was the most famous and most commissioned, certainly the busiest American sculptor of this period, and I certainly think he was the most talented, the most imaginative, a very graceful sculptor. He was Irish. He was born in Ireland of a French father and came to the United States as a little boy. And then he went to Paris in the 1870s and learned how to be a top-notch sculptor. So he came back and in the mid-1870s became really the go-to sculptor for American public monuments. Very, very popular and famous. By the 1890s, he's much in demand, and he did the Diana sculpture as a personal favorite for his friend Stanford White, who was one of his buddies. And so they conspired together to do what was a kind of edgy sculpture for the city.
And you talked about this as the Gilded Age.
Well, gilding in general, on furniture, on picture frames, on jewelry, this was the note of the 1890s, but it's also remembered historically as a playful time of parties and of high spirits and of prosperity. And so Diana, who is, of course, the goddess of the hunt, was a perfectly appropriate figure to be poised on top of what was effectively a big sports arena. Madison Square Garden had concerts and operas, but it was mostly famous for boxing matches and circuses. So Diana has this sporting quality, which is, I think, also appropriate to the Gilded Age.
How often are outdoor sculptures brought in? She was very site-specific. So now she's site-specific in a new way. How often does that happen?
Well, not often, because she's so big, but she's right at the edge of being small enough to be brought indoors. Most of St. Gaudens' other public pieces remain outdoors, and they have to be cared for in the environment, which is something we're actually quite glad we don't have to worry about the weather anymore. However, there are other pieces like this by St. Gaudens, the Shaw Memorial, which is installed on Boston Common. There's a plaster version of it that is now indoors at the National Gallery, gilded. So it's of the same scale, exactly, as the outdoor one. It's now indoors. So, there's some pieces that have crossed the line can be both outdoors and indoors.
And you said the museum now has four sculptures from the same artist?
The city has four. There are two on Kelly Drive, and then there are two in the museum. The other piece that we have that is also one of St. Gaudens' most beautiful is called the Angel of Purity. And it's actually a memorial to the death of a beautiful young woman. It's an angel in mourning, and that's also on view in the galleries.
He created Diana to stand on top of Madison Square Garden, high above people's heads, and you talked about how the way he created the surface was with that in mind. It's interesting to me when you see these beautiful sculptures with such detail when people couldn't actually see that detail from below. When you put Diana at a level where people can actually see her, are there differences in terms of what he perhaps would have done if it was this low?
That's a really good question. And partly, I have to feel like St. Gaudens was a little sad when he saw his sculpture so high up, because the people on the street actually could never appreciate the finer points. Because he's an artist, and he's working on this in the studio, and he's making it as beautiful as possible from an arm's length away. And then suddenly it's 350 feet away, and all of the subtlety that he's built into it is no longer visible. So in a way, I'm happy to bring it down to earth a little bit so that people can actually see how beautiful she is. On the other hand, he knew she was going to be high, and he made some compromises for that distance. She actually has a very easy-to-understand silhouette. Her pose makes it easy for you to understand that she's standing on one foot, you know, that she's pulling her bow. So he moved her body so that her position would be easy to read from a distance, and it makes an interesting silhouette. So he was making some kind of adjustments for the distance, but then he just made it far too good. You know, it just didn't have to be so subtle, given the fact that it was going to be seen from a long distance. But that's just because he was an artist and he was making it as beautiful as he could. It's the only nude he ever did. And so I honestly think he became invested in the beauty of this object, you know, because it was an interesting project for him. And so that is a reason why I think he made it so beautiful, because it was really the first time he'd tried this, and it was not something that the American public really was keen about, having nudes in public. So he knew he was testing the envelope a little bit here.
That's great. Well, she looks beautiful. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.